All right, welcome to this week's Foch's Corner. We're short a couple of players right at the moment. We got Phony Bennett, of course, live from 757, and Dougie Fresh. Mark is on the way. Hav is out, right? Hav's completely
Yeah,
out.
Hav's
Mark?
out tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got the opening soccer game for his youngest daughter, so that's exciting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, good excuse. And Mark is just running late. I think he's in a clinic, but he'll be joining shortly. MTW. First question I had for you guys: seeding for the ACC tournament. There's a lot of little, some rumblings about, especially with our friends there in Blacksburg. Do they deserve a double bye, having not played so many games? Like, how do you guys think we should seed it, Phony?
Well, yeah, so there's two different questions there. What does Virginia Tech deserve? And then in general, how should
Yeah.
the ACC do it? I've been a fan of doing it just by winning percentage, understanding teams are going to play a different number of games. That's not all on them, and it is what it is. So, yeah, I think winning percentage is probably the most transparent way. It's probably more fair to use something like KenPom and try to like determine them, but
Ding.
there's too much. That's just not transparent enough, I think, for fans. And so I'm fine with winning percentage, but that doesn't mean our Hokie friends should get that double bye.
Yeah, is it? I heard. I mean, the WCC is using the adjusted standings from KenPom to do their ratings, which is kind of crazy.
That's awesome. You can get away with that, I guess, when you're
When it doesn't matter, and Gonzaga's gonna run away with it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think they're going to be number one on pretty much any system they use. So, yeah, I mean, it's questionable because, and really, I used to always hate this excuse. So I say it now with some trepidation, but the unbalanced schedules in the ACC regular season are just magnified this year. And through no one's fault, but if you look, Virginia Tech is 2-3 against the top eight teams in the ACC. They only played five of the other seven teams among the top eight. Sorry, my cat's meowing. And they were 6-0 against the bottom four. So 2/3 of their wins in conference came from the bottom four teams. So might their record be a little overinflated? Probably, but I don't know how you can fairly adjudicate that.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to tackle. How are they going to do it for the NCAA tournament? You're going to have teams with all kinds of records and games. So many variables this year, I should put it that way. Like
Yeah,
to
well, and they've
remember.
got the net ratings, and
Yeah.
they're allowed to look at Ken Pom, and they always kind of work their own special sorcery anyway, so. It's going to be what it's going to be. I'm pretty sure the Hoos are going to be involved, and I'll just be happy to have some kind of postseason.
Let's hope we're involved. Who knows with COVID?
Oh, well, yeah, and that's the really weird thing. So, I've seen this question about Gonzaga versus the field. A lot of time has been spent on that. I think we were talking about it the other day, but now like it's on Twitter, and because Mark Titus brought it up. And just given the randomness of what can happen in the tournament and the fact that some teams will be eliminated from the tournament without losing a game,
Right.
it's going to be a very hard tournament to predict. And I hope the number of teams that have to bow out is very small. It'd be great if it were zero, but I mean, that's going to definitely have an impact on a lot of folks' brackets.
So do we think there will be more underseeded or overseeded teams? Is it just going to be all mixed up? Are we going to have like a 16 seed that's really like in a normal year a 12?
Oh yeah, I think you're going to get overseeding. I don't think you ever get an underseeded, right? Vis-a-vis however you look at it. By the way, I don't hate that Gonzaga against the field thing because only because this year is different. So they say it every year. It was Virginia against the field. It was Michigan State against the field. You're playing against the field, no matter what team you are.
No, but they're talking about in Vegas, the bet is
Oh.
50% Gonzaga. So, if you bet the field, if anyone other than Gonzaga wins,
Yeah.
you win your bet.
Yeah, it's like
Yeah.
a best of call
It's
every year.
usually like UConn women's usually has that bet. Rarely
Okay.
does men's have that bet.
Right. There's no one so overwhelming. And that's the thing. Yeah, I would take Gonzaga versus any team in the field right now, one-on-one, but there's too much randomness in the tournament. There's teams, there's always a chance that they have to go out, which would be really the worst thing of all if Gonzaga had to go out because of a COVID thing and miss it. Because, I mean, that puts a second asterisk next to whoever wins the title this season.
Well, technically they could, right? Because now they're probably 90 days out from their outbreak. Because I think 14 of their 15 players had COVID, but that was in December.
Oh, they're not getting COVID anymore.
They're probably not. Oh, but there's a chance one person could have it. What if Kispert or Timmy or Suggs gets it? Then it's a different ball game.
The way I saw their system and the way they played. And those three guys were great. Not so much Suggs, our game, but he's been great. I'm not worried about Gonzaga having a player. Won't lose.
Yeah, but let me, Dougie, here, you know what, to answer that? You saw Gonzaga when Virginia was not that good, and you caught them on a night when they didn't miss. You saw us lose to Florida State when we were better. We were much improved, and Florida State torched us.
Right.
And it just happened to be one of those games when we were off and Florida State was on and they had great energy. If you watch Baylor and West Virginia the other day, or you talked about watching Ohio State, Michigan a couple of days ago.
Illinois, Michigan. Yeah.
Illinois, Michigan. Those are good teams.
Really good teams.
Right. So I wouldn't just can the trophy to Gonzaga right now. I would actually take that field bet. First of all, the field bet. Yes, COVID. In addition to COVID, there's injuries. People get injured all the time, which impact who wins, right?
Everybody's injured now anyway. Everybody's hurt. Nobody. No.
But injuries where you can't play.
Yep.
Where you're done for the season, like Villanova, right? They just lost Gillespie. I don't know if he's coming back. And if he's not,
that's
going
awful.
Back,
by the way,
have a hard time.
What did he hurt? What happened to him? Knee?
I don't know. I think it was his knee. I think.
Oh.
I mean, that really, when you think about it, that is a crazy bet. Gonzaga versus everyone else.
What's the spread?
Even money.
Wow.
And that's nuts.
No, that's too low. You're dumb to bet that. You've got to get more. You've got to be plus 240 or whatever the number is. I don't know
what
the number
is, but that's how even money is heavily their favorite, I guess. I mean,
I'm taking that bet.
Yeah,
if I were betting the guy, I'm taking the field.
You're taking the field. Yeah. Fail field seems really safe.
Yeah, I wonder if
the field always wins.
Yeah. I guess that's one.
But it's also specific too, like Michigan, who I've watched and love, and I think what Juwan's, I guess it's him. He's done it, or they've all done it. But they're very specific to. They need their big men to be dominant, so they have a 28-year-old freshman named Dickinson or somebody from Virginia, right? What's the kid's name? Left-handed?
Yeah.
But Coffey, I think it was Coffey from Illinois. If you got that defender on him, maybe Timmy's the guy. It's a different ball game, but and Michigan needs that. They have livers and the whole thing, but I like Michigan a lot. It's my point.
When you look at every team in the Big – I'm sorry, Dougie. Every team in the Big Ten, not every team. I think there are five or six teams in the Big Ten have monstrous – very talented bigs.
Yes.
And that could be a problem. And if you have like a Michigan who's got other really good players besides they got two big guys, right? And then you have Purdue. Purdue's got that huge guys like 7'3" and they're playing better. You have Rutgers even has a huge guy. Ohio State is just good all around. Who am I thinking of? Iowa with Garza, right? Garza. And they have shooters. There's a lot of big – so those teams could be tough matchups at some point for Gonzaga. And Gonzaga has – I mean, they're blowing their competition away, but it's not like they're winning every game by 40 either. They're winning some games by 15 in their conference against teams that aren't extremely talented and extremely good, right? And then – so I think a lot of it's going to be matchups, and it's going to be – I'm so looking forward to it. I was watching conference tournaments the last couple of days, and I'm so looking – it's so much more – it's starting to get exciting now again.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Gonzaga has also played pretty weak competition all this time, so we'll see how that affects them.
What makes a team less prepared, playing weak competition or playing only two games in the last 30 days like Virginia Tech?
That's a good question. Playing two games in 30 days, because you Gonzaga's played bad competition in the past and still been very successful during the tournament. They went to the tournament against Carolina in the championship. What was that, 4 years ago?
Yeah.
5 years ago?
No, it wasn't that long ago.
Right? And they don't, and it was the same conference they played in now that this year that they played in, you know, at that time. Maybe that there were one or two teams that were a little better, but I think St. Mary's was in it, who was really good at that. I think that St. Mary's may have been better at that time. But outside of St. Mary's, maybe BYU was a little better. I don't know how good San Francisco was at the time, but they ran away with the competition, right? They killed everybody and then got to the tournament and they had a really good run. And they were really good at that time too.
Well, and I think Gonzaga is one of those teams that from the limited amount of action I've seen, they don't seem to play down to their opponent like a lot of teams, like we sometimes do. They execute at a high level most every game. And so I think that keeps them better prepared.
I think all the best teams do that. Like, I didn't see Gonzaga do much against us that they prepared for. I think Gonzaga played their game. And, you know, it was a different time for us. But that's the only – by the way, that's one of two games of Gonzaga I've seen this year, so I can't really speak to it.
Right.
But the best teams do what they do, right?
Right.
They don't adjust.
But I think a lot of us are ready to anoint. A lot of UVA fans are ready to give Gonzaga the championship trophy because we saw them play against UVA, and a lot of people haven't seen them play, and they may not have seen other teams play.
No, that's always what happens, right? You see that other team at their best, and you just jump to conclusions.
And you see them play one time.
Right. That definitely influences me. I mean, I've tried to watch them when I can this season, but yeah, there's a handful of teams, at least a handful of teams that have a chance at beating them. You know, I don't think they're an unbeatable team. I mean, hell, we haven't had that yet, right?
Baylor is really good. Really good.
Really good.
I don't know how big they are. I don't know how tall they are. I know they've got a big dude. I think he's only, you know, 6'9". I could be mistaken, but I've watched them play a few times this year. But who has Gonzaga beaten that's been really good this year? Who'd they beat?
I think somebody Iowa. Early.
Who'd they beat? They beat Iowa.
Destroyed Iowa. Iowa couldn't guard them at all.
Right.
That's the game I saw.
Iowa's going to have a hard time with athleticism.
Yeah, there was a little bit. There was a little stretch in the beginning of the season where they were killing everybody, right?
Iowa or.
No, right before they played us, right before Gonzaga played UVA, they crushed Iowa, right? That was the game.
I watched that game because it was the lead up to our game, and Iowa was like the most porous defense I've ever seen. It was just like Gonzaga did whatever they wanted.
Yeah, they
mostly
they
drives. They I think want... Suggs. You know why? It was a national televised game, and Suggs went off, and they were talking about it. He likes being on national TV. Blah blah blah. Right. His dad was there.
I mean, they beat Kansas pretty easily.
They did.
They beat Iowa by 11 points final.
Who else did they beat? Early. They beat West Virginia. West Virginia, that was a close one.
Garza had like 38 against.
They beat Kansas by 12, but that's when we thought Kansas was better than they were.
Yeah, West Virginia, they beat pretty. That was a closer. That was the closest game, right? They crushed Auburn, who's actually good at that time, too.
They beat Virginia, who we probably thought was better at the time. And then
That's all of it. And then the rest is conference.
Right. And that's my point. But I think they're still really good. But they haven't played Baylor. Right. They haven't. Their game against Baylor got canceled. They haven't played West Virginia. They played West Virginia?
They played West Virginia and they won by five.
And West Virginia wasn't playing well at that time.
No, they weren't.
I like their team a lot, too. West Virginia.
Yep, and they play hard. They play hard. That's a team that's going to always play hard and get better.
And I don't know. I didn't realize at the time, but, man, they had a game against Baylor that was canceled.
Yeah,
that's right.
Number one versus number two.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm sure I realized that I blocked it out in the joy of the pandemic, but that would have been interesting. But, again, these teams are so different now than they were back at the beginning of December, especially having not had quite the same kind of preparation that they typically would. So, you know, I think we've got to disregard a lot of those really early season results for
every team, good and bad. Georgia Tech had two terrible losses to open the season. And right. I think they're actually a pretty decent team. I mean, I think they're every bit as good as really Virginia Tech and Louisville. I still think I'm struggling with where to place the who's in that group right now. But
yeah, I was just going to ask, where do what good we beat Clemson? Is that our best win this season?
No, our Towson win was our best win the first game. We literally had an NBA team
up there.
I think Georgia Tech is better than Clemson. What's Clemson just lost, right?
Clemson's on
the yeah, I think Georgia Tech. I would put Georgia Tech ahead of Clemson. We beat Georgia Tech twice.
Yep. And Clemson just lost.
Clemson lost to Syracuse last night.
I think, I mean, our best wins could be the two games against Georgia Tech and UNC.
UNC is always a good win. You can't negate that ever, right?
Yeah.
Those might be our best wins. I don't think Clemson's very good at all. You can't the five games they just won consecutively were not against good teams.
No, they're terrible. Our leagues, let's be honest, the ACC is not good.
It's weak. How many NCAA teams have we played this season?
You mean outside of NCAA tournament teams?
Yeah.
None. Gonzaga.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Georgia Tech.
Virginia Tech's going to be in.
Virginia Tech.
But we didn't play them.
Tech, Georgia Tech.
Oh, yeah, I guess that we did play them the one time. They got us. They beat us down pretty good.
Yeah, they beat us.
Yeah, minus outside of the conference, the teams that will make it to the tournament, we've played one tournament team, I think. Right? Wow. Florida State. Florida State's going to make it. We're going to make it. Georgia Tech's going to make it. Louisville's going to make it. I think NC, if they win on Saturday, they're going to make it. Virginia Tech.
So maybe we've beaten one tournament team this season. UNC.
Maybe two. Maybe Georgia Tech and UNC.
Wow.
Yeah, I think Georgia Tech and UNC. Hopefully Louisville. You know, we haven't had our shot against them yet.
Are they in? Louisville is the next one.
They'll be in.
If we can beat them.
What are the talking heads predicting? I saw somebody predicted like 8 ACC teams or something stupid like that.
Yeah, that's too many. It shouldn't be.
Just because there's, it's just how do we get Duke in there by saying all the teams above them are better?
Right. We have to do everybody between Florida State and Duke in the ring. You know, otherwise it looks suspicious.
You almost need Duke in this year if you want tons of people to watch. People are going to watch UNC, of course.
Oh, it's going to be down for sure, right?
This is a very weak conference.
I think this year's tournament is going to be huge as far as viewership because
we missed it last year,
and there's going to be so much randomness. I think there's going to be a lot more upsets than we typically see because seeding isn't going to be done well at all, and you know teams just aren't at the same level. So I think it's going to be a very exciting tournament, and people are going to be ready for it.
And people will be home and can watch it. They don't have to take off from work. I think viewership is going to be up huge.
They're starting it on the weekend. Is that the deal?
Are they?
I disagree.
Well, you said because people don't have to take time off work. It's all.
Yeah, you can just turn it on in the background.
No, but everybody watches at work anyway.
That's probably true.
No, for sure. I mean, it's like it's a known thing. Like turn the game on and do it as a crew. Depends on your job, obviously, but
you don't think people are going to watch?
I think it's going to be much less watched than the usual, you know, March Madness, as they call it, which I don't like that term, but
yeah, like okay, Vegas.
So I'm saying ratings are going to be up. You're saying ratings are going to be down. We need a gentleman's bet here, Fresh.
Yeah, whatever you want. I don't know how to do ratings. Is this a KenPom rating?
Nielsen.
How do we do ratings?
Nielsen's right. Okay. The Nielsen's are the definitive.
No, but it's like it's. I mean, it's an asterisk.
What do you drink, Fresh?
Sapporo or Coors Light.
I got to be able to send you something better than that.
Nothing like that. I get it. You owe me 30 Coors Lights if I'm right. I owe you whatever you want if you're right. How's that?
One bottle of bourbon.
Top shelf bourbon.
Yep, top shelf.
Yeah.
It's easy.
The thing is, are people going to be watching it on their computers, or are they going to be watching it on their TVs?
Both.
I'm just talking about eyes on the tournament. Yeah.
Total tournament. Are you guys betting on total tournament? Because they usually only share Final Four data.
Yeah, you gotta be specific. Well, Final Four. Oh, I'm even a bigger seller of Final Four watches this year.
Yeah.
I want to know who's watching these first two rounds. Like, to me, the
first two rounds is what's interesting.
We also have to include attendance with this, Chris.
I guess you can collect now, Dougie. But Dougie might be right. You think about all the people that go to get together and go out to a party or a restaurant or some type of venue, Vegas, right? Or college, people in college, right? That go support their teams and the bars are packed. And, you know, outside of Florida, Mississippi, and Texas, I don't know that, you know, those mandates are going to be lifted where people are going to be able to gather together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm saying there is a deep need for sports right now, for entertainment, for escapism. And there's going to be a more than usual plucky underdogs that casual fans can root for. You might have a team that you're that attached to, or the team you are attached to may not have made the tournament this year.
But did you see the ratings for like the Super Bowl?
You're gonna watch
in the NBA. NBA Super Bowl, the whole thing, the ratings, I guess it's Nielsen. They were way down this year, and I'm not. I'd love to be wrong. This is a good bet. If I lose, I'll be happy because I hope everybody's March Madness doing their brackets.
I would just be happy buying you some beer fresh. So,
All right, so you can. How about this? I'll let you out for 24 at this point, not 30. 24. You're out.
24 Sapporos.
Exactly.
I'm curious. What do you think the temperature is on expectations for UVA in this tournament? We should probably do a poll out there. Twitter poll.
We should do a poll. I've seen, you know, our more recent performances certainly has a lot more people thinking we're not going to escape that first weekend. You know, but a lot of people seem to think, I would say the true believers still want to say Sweet 16. I just don't. I mean, there's a lot of fans that will say, yeah, this is a championship team. And if they put it all together, we've seen what they look like at their best. They played an entire game like that against Clemson. They can be a very good team. They haven't shown that consistently enough to make us believe in the tournament. But I say, I think that would be a really good poll.
Maybe we do it right before after the ACC tournament. We'll do a poll.
Yeah, that's going to be so impacted by whatever they do in the ACC tournament. So much of it is what have we done lately. But the problem is, like we said, I mean, if Georgia Tech is our best win of the season and we're hoping they get in, I mean, that's not a great sign.
that's what I'm saying.
So do you put the poll out after the ACC tournament or after the matchups are set?
After the matchups, right before people getting their brackets and they're filling them out, and they've had time to think, we put out a bracket and they'll tell us where.
Sunday night,
we'll probably need. We can do Monday, Tuesday, right? We need Tuesday. We'll give people a couple days to really think about.
Right, but you can put it out, Rick. We can put it out Sunday and then just let people have till Tuesday to respond.
Yeah, or you just wait. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of thought about my bracket, and I mean, typically, with these Tony Bennett teams, the last 5-6 years, whatever, I've probably had us winning it all every year, and in some years that's been more of a stretch than others. But it's something you can say, yeah, I could see this team do it. I think that's going to be a tough ask this year. Yeah,
absolutely.
All right, so no question. Without knowing who we're seated against, who we're playing, and prior to the ACC tournament, how far do we go?
Man, that's tough because I don't, you know, the way I do my brackets, when I pick my bracket, I've traditionally, for my teams, I've picked them to advance one round further than my heart tells me they're really going to do. So if I think they're a Sweet 16 team, I'll pick them as an Elite 8 team. And I mean,
so in 20, let me ask you this question, Phony, before you answer the other one. So in 2018, where'd you pick us? Where did your heart tell you we were going?
2018? Oh, I had us winning it all. I mean, we were number one seed. There's
right. No, and 2019?
I had us winning it all. Yeah, I won my office pool that year. I did not win it in 2018.
I'm glad you're honest.
But yeah, both years. I mean, anytime we've been a number one seed, like that's easy to me. I mean, they're picking us to be in the final four, so I'm picking us. It's more, you know, coming out as a five or six seed this year. Then you kind of look, okay, if we're a five seed, which is where I would put us right now, I mean, that doesn't put us in the Sweet 16, right? If everything goes to seed, that has you lose in the first weekend, which with the way this team has played and has really had to fight and claw against Miami, like I think that's certainly in the realm of possibility. I would like to see us at least get to the Sweet 16. I think we say if we get to the Sweet 16, we say, okay, that's a COVID season success.
Yeah, I feel like Sweet 16 is a success for this team, right? I think that's kind of what I get. I mean, I always put Virginia to win. I even did it when Pete Gillen and later, I always put us all the way. I'll do that again this year. But realistically, I think what we win one game.
All right, here's the big question, T-Dubs. How many pools do you do? And if you do multiple ones, do you pick Virginia for each one?
Yeah, I always pick Virginia each one.
Each pool?
Yeah.
Really? So how many pools do you enter?
For money, probably like two, three. Okay. But then I do a bunch. We like do them for fun, but I always just put Virginia winning it all. I can't not put that. Like that just feels awkward. It just feels
certainly in the Tony Bennett era, it's always been or mostly been us winning it all. I'm not really sure about the previous. Well, I knew in previous eras. I mean, sometimes on these Pete Gillen teams, I would have us making it to the Sweet 16, or really probably the year we lost to Gonzaga, I probably had us picked to go to the Elite Eight. Like I figured that was legitimate. Now I dream bigger, but this year, in the pool that there's money riding on now, in my pool that's just pride amongst my friends, I'll probably still pick Virginia all the way. But in the pool that I do with money on it, I'm probably picking us to the Sweet 16 and keeping my fingers crossed. And if I'm wrong, I will be happy every game after that I'm wrong. Like I'll happily accept that loss.
So in 2019, how much money did you win in your pool?
Oh, it wasn't big. I mean, it's just a small office group, so it was $100 or something. I mean, you know, not life changing. I mean, sure, I thought about quitting my job, but
that was for other reasons.
Yeah,
nothing to do with the
right. I need to get in a bigger office. If I worked for DuPont, I'd be rolling in it. But yeah, but it was, yeah, and my daughter Ella, who goes to the games with me, the Justin McCoy fan, she had won it previously. She'd won it more recently than me in those things, because her picks are typically pretty good. She doesn't, and she, her strategy, she doesn't know as much about the other teams, so she defers to the seeding more often than I do. And then, you know, she's a little bit better about the ACC stuff. And you know, I think so many of us who watch a lot of it, we really overthink it, but we're heavily influenced by those few games that we do see, you know, from the Big Ten. Or
I always think about, I just know Virginia and who's played Virginia, and my sample size is so small that I'm just like, screw it, I know nothing.
In terms of right, yeah, you're definitely influenced by the teams that you've seen play and how the teams that you've seen play have played against your favorite team. Right. Like we said, you know, we're probably giving Gonzaga too much credit because they brutalized us.
No, I mean, even as well as I know UVA and as closely as I follow UVA, it's really hard. Imagine trying to follow every team the way we follow UVA. It's impossible. You couldn't. Yeah, it'd be really tough. I mean, you just kind of pick your poison when it comes to the draft. I mean, the brackets.
Yeah, and there is a certain comfort. Like if you do have your team, your favorite team losing early in the tournament and they keep winning, I mean, that's still, you feel okay about that. You know, either way, you're probably benefiting there. So, you know, it's kind of like hedging your bet.
Yeah. So what's your plan for the tournament, this ACC tournament? Are you going to do anything?
I don't even know what time the games are. You know, it'd be cool if we could all go down there, but you know, I've taken time off work. I've watched it at my desk. I mean, I tend to watch all of the ACC tournament games. I think it's the best tournament. It's got such a great history. And, you know, I'm one of those old school ACC fans that thinks it's of huge importance. Like a lot of people, you know, okay, then if the national championship's 100, what's your conference tournament? Is it a 20, you know, is it a 10? I would put the ACC tournament higher than that. Like that's a big deal. And so when we won that first one, or our overall second one, but for the first one under Tony, like that was such a huge sports moment for me.
It was incredible. I actually, my brother and I used to always talk about, we'll probably see a Final Four before an ACC championship. That's how we always thought about it. Cause it's just hard to win the ACC. Mm-hmm. And for TV to have done it now, how many do we have? Two?
I think TB's done it twice.
Twice. Devin Hall and Joe Harris, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The first one with Joe, that was crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. That's not easy. Anything else going on in the Twitter sphere for you?
No, I think a lot of people are, you know, there's some obviously talk about Virginia Tech. You know, with their seeding and just the fact that they haven't played, like they've played two games since February 6th, which you have to worry about their preparedness when they finally do play another game, assuming that they're clear by the time the ACC tournament rolls around and all that. I mean, they've been an interesting team because they've looked really good at some points. They looked really good against Virginia, but that was the last really good win that they had, and that was back in January, I believe. So
yeah, that's crazy.
Curious about that. The ACC tournament is just weird looking ahead to that. I have no idea what to expect. I looked at some of the seeding and it almost looked like we'd be better if we could have dropped down in the seeding. So I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know who we're going to play. Louisville's going to be tough. Who do you have in that game this Saturday?
I don't know. I have no clue at this point. It's really hard. Like, I don't know enough about, this is like the first year where it just feels like, who knows? You know, it's like, are we game? We don't even know if we're going to have the game up until the game. And then it's
now I actually stay out. Yeah. And it's just, I just don't know what team we have. I've never been, now we're in March. I still don't know who this Virginia team is.
Yeah. Because
they definitely put it together for a couple games and they've looked really good. I think they really looked their best against Clemson. I think those wins against Georgia Tech are good wins because I think Georgia Tech's a good team. Right. Or a win against Carolina showed the poise that we haven't had every game. I don't know about, you know, what's in the players' heads, and I feel like there's going to be a lot more surprise in the tournament. No outcome in the ACC tournament is going to surprise me this year.
I agree. It is madness, as we'd say.
I'm definitely afraid still that Duke is going to win the ACC tournament. That's how they're going to dance.
Guarantee themselves in there. Yeah, I don't know. This is going to be a really, really interesting year for this is the strangest feeling for any sports season I've had. I can say that.
I mean, I feel comfortable because I'm not like pinning all my hopes on, okay, we got to win the championship this year. I mean, right. 2019, you felt a lot more pressure that year for the Virginia team to do well and to shut up a lot of folks. Right now, I feel like probably how you finish this season doesn't matter as much because, again, it's the COVID season.
Yeah.
If you win at all, whatever team wins at all, they should still celebrate. It's still a real championship, and they managed whatever this was better than anyone else, and they deserve the credit for that. But it's weird enough. I'm not going to get too down about
it. Do you think Gonzaga is feeling crazy pressure this season?
But most of their people have had it. Yeah. I mean, this is more than ever, it's their chance. And I think they probably realize that not only do they have a very special team among the very good teams they've had over the years, I think this is definitely arguably their best. Plus the landscape in college basketball, whether it's due to COVID or not, is much more to their favor. So, I mean, I think this is one of those years where you say, okay, this is the year we got to do it. And what are they going to do with those expectations thrust upon them?
We didn't get to your expectations, Mark. What are your expectations for this team?
I agree with you. Sweet 16 is a huge, huge success. I think, you know, again, it's going to be based on matchups, completely based on matchups. And listen, if this team can figure out, if they shoot well and they can figure out how to move the ball around on offense off pick and rolls, right, and hit the right guy, or they don't turn the ball over and rebound, right? We know that Kihei, the chance, the bigs are going to hit shots and the defenses are going to key on those bigs, on Sam, Jay, and Trey, right? So somebody else has got to hit a shot. If somebody else scores 10 points, we've got a chance, right? And if we can figure out on switches how to get the ball to Jay and Sam, we're going to be fine. Right, fine meaning I think we'll have a good chance to get to this Sweet 16. After that, it's going to be very, very difficult for this team to get beyond the Sweet 16.
It's troubling because I feel like there's so much talent there, but it's like the gears haven't meshed yet. Mark.
Okay, so we did this before, and when we rated the guards with Kihei. Right, and we gave Kihei different. We all had different ratings for him. We weren't that far off. The range wasn't.
Now,
that
I want to point out for anyone listening, I gave Kihei, I think ultimately the highest rating, which
out of all of us.
Yeah, seems weird, but yeah.
And the ratings are high, so I'm measuring him against the best players, the top, the elite, and so I think he's a really good player. Is he the best guard, best point guard in the country? No, he's not. Is he a top five? No. But the top five players are really good, and those are NBA players. So let's really measure this. But when you look at every player, right, I don't think at every position, if Jay Huff were in the Big Ten right now, he's going to do a few things better than some of the other guys. But the Big Ten is tough, man. Those five guys, those five schools, Illinois is big, Iowa's big, Wisconsin's big. All their bigs are so good. Michigan, and they're bruisers. They are killers. Where does J-Hub fit there? Nah. Where does J-Hub fit against Timmy? Timmy's good. He's not the best. And he's 6'8". Timmy from Gonzaga. So if we say J-Hub is in the top 75, 80 percentile, we say Sammy's in the top 75, 80 percentile, which is really freaking good. Really, really good. Right? We say Trey sometimes when he's on, yes, 80, top 80 percentile. But he's been MIA the last four games. He did okay. He did fine against Miami, but Miami is not, you know, that's a low-level team.
Is that on the players or is that on the offense, the style?
That's a good question. That's a great question. But when you when you measure all of it together, where does that leave us? But your original question was, you think we have so much talent. And I'm not sure where that talent lies. If you say those guys are top 75, 80 percentile, which is unbelievable in college basketball, right? But if you watch all these other schools play, Michigan, Ohio State, Baylor, West Virginia, Gonzaga, who you've seen, then you might say, oh man, those dudes are good, right? Our guys are good too, but are they the best at each position?
Right.
And then you look at our guards and where our guards fall amongst these other guys who are really good. And Reese is a first year. Where does he measure up against the top teams? Is he in the top 20?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think this year where we struggle against that is having those guys who are complete players and who can really get it done on both ends and you know, be efficient on offense, but still guard. You know, we have this guy's really good at this. This guy's really good at spot up jumpers. This guy's really good at on ball defense. But those complete players and you know, if I may say, I think Ty Jerome was a pretty complete player under Bennett. You know, we've definitely had, you know, a lot of guys that I think would fall under that I don't know that we have right now.
But also, right, when you're talking about 2018, 2019, and this is something we've discussed in the past, and we've talked about Ricky Stokes, when you allow your man to beat you off the dribble, and you have Mamadi Diakite there, you have Ralph Sampson, you have Isaiah Wilkins, you have Atkins, Darren Atkins, you have Anthony Gill, you have all those guys back there behind you. Who are gonna right, you have Dre, right? You have Dre, guys coming over to help. It's a whole different thing. Right. Like this, that team, when people say the 2019 was less talented than this year's team, like Kyle Guys and I, his father, right? He's like, what are people talking about? Right. And I feel badly that I mentioned his name, but,
I think, there was a point where it looked like we might be, across the entire starting lineup have more offensive skill or that might be able to compete. And look, I'm not the one that tweeted that. I'm just saying there was a point where we had five guys contributing. And it was only for a couple games but in the
that
row.
Team, that 2019 team, can you imagine if they played today and they would have won every game by 40 points?
Right, they'd be winning back-to-back championships because we didn't have one.
I think what people think when they say that is, all right, if everyone lined up at the three-point line and had a standstill shot, maybe this team has. But that's it. The game of basketball isn't played that way. So,
I think in general, Virginia fans are this season. They had their expectations changed and maybe had too high expectations because we had bigs who could really pour it in from deep. And,
yes.
And we haven't always had that. It's been so guard dependent. But what we ended up ignoring was the fact that our guards cannot pour it in from deep this year. And really our bigs can't either.
But I don't think people consider competition when they look at who's good and who's not good. And when you consider competition, when you look at the teams that were in the ACC in 2019 and 2018, when you look at all the players that are in the NBA from that year, and you look at the kids that are going to go to the NBA from this year, there's no contest. Yeah, there's none. There's really zero. Close. It's not even close. Not even close. Look at last year, too.
A lot of
players are in the NBA.
I mean, a lot of hope's been done. Jay Huff, right? People thought, Jay Huff, 7-footer, hit a bunch of threes. Sam can hit a bunch of threes. Trey can hit a bunch of threes. And that's where people get that feeling of, oh, my God, look at that. Three guys that can hit threes at the rate.
But they all three need to do it consistently.
Right. You
know? And unfortunately, as fans, we get too caught up in the confirmation bias. We forget that they haven't hit any threes their last two games, and now they've hit two today. And we're like, see, I told you they can hit threes. And it's just not the case.
And they're all good shooters and they're shooting well, but I still go back to look at the competition.
Yeah, that's fair.
The competition level is significantly different than it was 2 years ago.
Well, 2 years ago was incredible. I mean, just when I look at the one, I'm sadly, I watch the one shining moment all the time. That's like my pep talk for the day, but it's like, Ja Morant, Zion, right? It's
right. Think like how the good same that guys Duke in the league, was.
Right? Taco falls in there. Like I'm like, okay, this is a lot of highly skilled players were in that tournament.
Duke had three top six or seven picks, right?
Yeah.
They went to the NBA. Three, including the number one. What was Barrett? Number four or five?
Yeah.
Three, whatever. Cam Reddish. Like three, not one who was top 15.
Yeah.
Like the most dominant player in college basketball in a very, very long time. Right? Florida State had a couple of good players.
So this year, what's going to happen? Is the Ignite team going to take most of the top 10 picks?
No, they can't take most of them because I think there's three of them that will be drafted high, very high.
Okay.
Right. But
Ignite team, what is that?
I love Cade Cunningham too.
That is the the guys that opted out of college and went to the G League in this special whatever status that they got, right?
And speaking of G League, shout out to two guys, Momedy getting called up.
Yes,
exciting. And Ty averaging what 13 points, Mark, through his
three games. Yeah, he's doing really well. He's
killing it, man. What are you shrugging for, man? That's your boy. I don't know what his numbers are. I don't read KenPom. Like he's done well since his call up, and And UVA fans are excited, man.
Yeah, it's finally Mamadi back in the league tonight, and playing.
Right? Mamadi plays tonight, right?
Yeah, they called him back up.
I know. I think he's playing tonight. I think the Bucks play tonight. I don't think they play yet.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll get minutes. I don't really know much about that call up. Is, you know, like Ty is actually getting legitimate minutes and is, you know, I don't know if Mamadi's just going to be one of those what if players.
Yeah, they're not playing at them. They play at 5 Pacific.
The Bucks? PM.
Yeah, Bucks play the Grizzlies at 8 p.m. Eastern.
That's awesome. I'm so happy for Mamadi. Love that kid.
I'm happy for Ty. Aren't you happy for Ty, Mark?
Sure. I'm nervous watching games.
Do you watch his games?
Yeah, and I'll watch the replay and we'll talk about him.
Gotcha. You coach him up?
Always.
Do you ever give him that? What were you thinking? Are you focusing more on the times he screwed up than on the shots he made?
No, because now it's like I don't understand the strategies always. And we don't like the NBA is so different. The NBA, they don't have the same level of communication between coaches and players. But okay. We talked about tonight, they play tonight at 9 and there was an issue with the coach. The coach said something to him about his defense. Probably shouldn't be sharing this on the air. And I was like, I called him up when we were talking earlier. I was like, dude, your defense was really good last night. Really good. Much improved since the first game he played last week. And his ankle's still sore, whatever. And the first game, what's his name? Rondo made an incredible jab step. And he faked Ty out. I was like, ooh. So last night playing, Jalen Brunson got down court on him and made a good move. And I was like, oh, no. And then the rest of the game, his defense was so good.
Good. Like,
I'm talking – I couldn't believe it. And I don't – so we had a conversation, and the coach, I guess, said something to him about defense. But I had called him and said, incredible defense.
Good. That's awesome, man.
I'm very happy with that.
No, that's got to be killer watching your boy. Hey, just played, you know, talk about that level. I mean, that's got to be such a weird parenting thing to, you know, because you're a coach and a dad, and so you've got these different things pulling you there in that conversation. I don't envy that.
But the NBA is different. It's so different. In college, mm-hmm. I can pick things out and I can say, okay, this is what happened here. This is what happened there. I saw this, I watch off the ball. I don't watch the ball in college basketball. Or I keep one eye on the ball and one eye what's happening in the paint, or how guys are coming off screens, how guys are setting screens, and how the defense is set up and the strategy of the defense. And also I watch what plays are being run while I'm watching the ball. And in the NBA, it's just like, it's one-on-one, maybe a pick and roll. There's not many actions happening.
Yeah.
And it's like, you got to hit shots. You hit shots and you stay in front of your man. Because you're on an island by yourself in the NBA. There's not a lot of help. And there's certain rules that you don't violate in the NBA. Like, you don't give up that corner three no matter what. You stay on your man. So it's so hard to defend in the NBA. It's, like, impossible. And I don't know the offensive strategies. The only thing I said to him was, like, man, what do you guys don't run much, do you? The offense.
yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that you talk about watching off the ball, because – I think especially watching Virginia defense, like, if you really want to appreciate like what the bigs are doing, watch one of our bigs an entire possession off the ball. You know, and then it's like, oh, okay, that's difficult. And he's really good at that.
And how they constantly rotate. Some of those teams in the past getting multiple 30 second shot clock violations or 35 multiple shot clock violations. Sure. That's true testament to unbelievable defense, team defense, man-to-man and team defense. Unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, like, watching the guys off the basketball, the bigs rotate, the guards rotate, and it's a chess match when you watch
the guys
perform.
Yeah, and you know, if you're watching the bigs and you're watching all that energy they're expending, you know, hedging and recovering, and, you know, now they're coming over to help, and okay, now they're back out. It's maybe you understand why it's a little bit tougher for them to play well on the other end, because now they're catching their breath because they've been, you know, busting their ass. And watching the guards in Tony Bennett's system is interesting too, to really see how the pack line works, like especially around the top of the key and all that. But the bigs, the just total real estate they end up covering in a normal possession.
So you talk about real estate. I don't know if you got a chance to see the Jay Willie show last night.
I did not.
Where he was talking about the closeout drills they do, which is basically three guys are under the basket. They do a 3-on-3 closeout drill. They're three guys spread out on offense, like two guys on the wings and then one guy top of the key. The coach throws the ball out to the offense and the defensive players have to stop the ball. Can you imagine trying to do that against Kyle Guy, against Justin Anderson, against
it's 3-on-3. It's a 3-on-3 drill, you say?
So you have to go challenge a shot once the ball is already in Kyle Guy's hands, who's going to, once he gets it, like how rare is it going to be that he misses that shot, first of all? Or if you get really close to him, if there's a bad pass, that he's going to drive right by you or kick it to another really unbelievable player. So that's, they do that drill over and over and over again.
So it starts with him basically in that triple threat position at the top. And then, wow.
Yeah. And that's what helps them get really good on defense. That's one of the drills they just practice and rehearse constantly.
And that's a tough one.
It's impossible.
What are you supposed to do there?
Ray, that's your best hope.
I mean, having someone like Dre, who's that, I remember watching that drill and seeing Dre run it. I know he didn't like it, but it was like, that's scary. Like, imagine Dre running at you too. Reverse it. Imagine Dre with his wingspan running up to you and hands up and trying to, that's like, it's not easy. Both it's sides, true. Right? If especially if you're a first year, you're coming in, you're Carson McCorkle equivalent, and you've got DeAndre Hunter's flying at you, you're probably like, oh my God. But I know that didn't happen, but still.
No, but on offense, T-Dubs, it's a little bit different because you have a lot of space and room to catch the ball.
Right. You have more time.
You still have a lot of lead time before anybody knows
anything
going to get right at you. Right.
Right.
And what he said was, okay, T-Dubs asked the question that you asked Jay Wills last night.
So who do you think was the best at it, Phony?
The best at defending that?
Yeah.
Like since Tony Bennett's been there?
Uh-huh.
Man, that seems like a trick question. I'll go with Malcolm.
You get what, three guesses.
What's
three
that?
Three guesses.
Three. Wasn't Malcolm.
Okay, so like a more recent guy? I mean, talking London? I don't know why I said London. Like, I don't think of.
We'll give you a hint. Somebody that's long arms and big.
Oh, so Dre? I mean, because he had a huge wingspan.
He did.
No. So I don't know.
Akil.
See, I was thinking just guards were involved in this. Okay. Wow.
He said Mamadi maybe was second, right? He said Mamadi was close.
Oh, see, I was
by his fourth. By his last year, he was close.
Yeah, I was ruling all those guys out. Yeah, I mean, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, Akil was that first everywhere forward that Tony had.
Akil was the best defender I've ever seen. Him and then Zay was second in terms of like help and instinct. But Akil was like on pick and roll. I remember watching him. I mean, I didn't know anything about basketball, but just like when I watch him, I'm like, oh, that guy is everywhere. Yeah,
he was right. You watch him on slides, like he was just always like he's the prototype for a Tony Bennett guy sliding. Like,
yeah. If he didn't, I still think if he doesn't break his ankle. Break his wrist at the LeBron James camp, he has a completely different career. Because he went from, you know, almost 80% free throw shooter, and it dropped significantly. He was not a jump shooter anymore.
Right.
And he's, you know, big difference. And going into his senior season to break his wrist, like shooting wrist, that's tough.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And he did it apparently, and he was playing really well at the LeBron camp. and that happens. And then it's just down, right? Then it was like a tough season. He doesn't shoot well. He comes off of draft boards, and then he's an international player. Yeah. That's a damn shame.
How's he playing? Is he still playing internationally?
Yeah, he's still playing. He's still playing. He's playing well.
Doing well.
Where is he?
Yeah, I think he was in Spain, but I don't know where he's at now. He's been all over the place. I think he's starting with another squad now. Let's see. Yeah, he was incredible.
Yeah, I don't know where
There was another question that was asked. Well, actually, Dave Kane asked on the Tony Bennett show on the Coach's Corner. So we should definitely ask him on the Coach's Corner. Who would you, if you could coach one player, was it previous to his tenure there?
Yeah, all time, who would Tony Bennett like to coach? Who would you like to see Tony Bennett coach? And he said Ralph, but he's like, that's cheating. Everyone says
right. Ralph. It was like, are we ruling Ralph out? As
yeah, he did. He was like, of course I'm going to say Ralph, but if I'm going to be honest, then he picked somebody else. Who would you like to see under Tony Bennett?
Of his work level, I mean, I still have to go in again. It seems like cheating, but Brian Stith. I mean, because I think he could get it done on both ends for Tony, and I think he had the right kind of mindset. His head was in the right place to be a great Tony Bennett player.
Yeah.
What do you think, Mark?
That's what I said. I thought it would have been, but it wasn't, right, T Dubs?
It was Corey Alexander, just because he said, I'd love to hear him back up all his talk. Was he as good as he said he was?
Right. Well, that's not a legitimate answer. I mean, I think Corey would have transferred after his first year when he got sat for, trying to take too many liberties with the basketball. I mean, I don't know that would have worked that well.
Closeout drill. Yeah, Brian Stith would have been amazing under Tony Bennett.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it would have been a great player. And Ralph being a guy, I mean, even before the three-point line, I mean, I think early in his career, like Ralph's a guy that wanted to shoot the three, that could be that big guard. Like, just think this year, instead of Jay Huff, we have Ralph Sampson, 7'4". I mean, I think Ralph wanted to bring the ball up court. They just didn't let him.
Yeah, he would have been something else. And who was another person that would have been? Curtis Staples, I feel like, would have obviously been another incredible player under Tony Bennett.
Oh, in that system?
And that's coming off screens. He would move a blocker. I don't even want to know how many points he would score a game. Harold Dean, also another one. Because he could play. He was a great combo guard.
Yeah, I'm trying to think some of my favorite players. Like, I'm thinking, like, okay, no, I don't know that he would have done well under him. Jason Williford, would he have had some success? Did you ask him?
He said he probably wouldn't have lasted.
He said he wouldn't have played because he couldn't shoot like that off the screens. I think Curtis Staples probably is up there in terms of, like.
Oh, yeah, he definitely would have had a role. I mean, the way he could just come off and just get that shot up so quickly.
How would Richard Morgan have done?
Richard Morgan, I mean, Richard Morgan was great coming off screens as well, but I think his shot selection would have drove Tony Bennett crazy. he was always hot. It didn't matter.
Right.
He took some questionable, he was a volume shooter, and I don't know. Let's just say he doesn't value the position like Tony Bennett would like.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have an easier time coming up with guys who wouldn't have worked out that well.
Yeah. What about someone like Junior Burrow, like incredible low post player? How would he have done?
I think he would have been fine. I mean, he played good defense. I don't think, I mean, Jeff Jones played a really physical defense. I don't think they covered as much ground as Tony Bennett would expect him to, because I don't remember all that hedging from the Jeff Jones days. But
I'm just thinking him as a blocker, he wouldn't have been very happy.
Right. Spending his time. Yeah. I still appreciate his post moves.
He was incredible down low. I mean, another player would have been great. Cornell Parker would have been defensively, yeah, he would have never come off the court. He would have played 40 minutes a game.
Right.
If he was, he would have been something else.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this, you know, I'm trying to think, you know, Chris Alexander was a guy who really was more defensive than anything. I think his shooting percentage was probably incredibly high because
he just dunked it every time.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, they weren't looking for him, but he was that Jack Salt kind of role player that I think Tony could appreciate.
He was surrounded by scorers, so he really wasn't asked to do a whole lot in the scoring front. I'm sure he could have developed that, but.
Right, but he seemed okay with that role. Yeah. And again, that's something else. You need that buy-in, you know, especially in Tony's system. So I think he would have been a good one. We should have Chris. He's on Twitter. Has Chris been on your show?
No, he hasn't. We need to get him on.
Yeah.
It'd be great. We'll try to get some more guests coming up here. Pre-game, do we want to have anyone for the pre-game show? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, let's bring some other former Who back.
Yeah, for the last game, we have to. We got to. Yeah. Get a try.
Yeah, let's see who we can get to jump on with us. Maybe someone who participated in the pylon on Dre against in Louisville.
Describing that play in the huddle. So let's find somebody who can tell us what play was called. What did Tony call with 0.9 seconds left or whatever it was?
Yeah, it's 3:30. So maybe, I don't know if Zay has a game, but maybe the time difference will work for him this time.
Yeah, I'll ask him.
Because he was at the bottom. He was one that was just pissed off at the bottom of the huddle.
You know? Yes, he was not happy to be in there. All right, yeah, I'll see if Zay can do it. That's a good one. I mean, Louisville, the Yum Center, that's Charlottesville, JPJ South,
yeah, right? That's JPJ West, man. We've played well there historically. I mean, Southwest. Not just against Louisville either, thanks to 2019.
Love that place. I love it. I don't think I had a bad moment there that whole weekend.
Incredible.
And that whole thing was incredible. That's like
very, very good people there. Met some nice people.
And then White Castle at the end of the night.
That's disgusting.
I never had White Castle until then. So
who talked you into having? Who were you with?
It was right after we left the hotel. Remember, you opted out of that. I think it was me and.
Oh.
Remember, you opted out. You were like, I'm going to sleep. And we were like,
Yeah.
I think Kobe. Did Kobe go? I don't even know if Kobe went with us. He might not have either. There's a few of us. We just all went.
I would have gone to White Castle.
Yeah. It was good.
Love some sliders.
I mean, it is absolutely gross, but it was good.
Sure. But
yeah. Best post-game meal when you're winning like that. I mean, that was just crazy. Remember, didn't we try to go to some places, but everywhere was closed by then, right? Wasn't that the thing? And they were like, we're going to White Castle. And I think you went to order room service. That's what happened. Yeah, I think you went to order room service.
Okay.
I think.
I remember what I was doing. Not for sure.
Anyway. All right. Anything else?
Nah, man.
Anything else on Netflix? Are there any Netflix shows you guys are watching?
I've been watching on Prime on Something on a Hill with Kevin Bacon.
Somebody texted me that they are starting because of the last Voices Corner with Netflix. They started, was it The Queen's? They said it was really good to watch it. So Queen's Gambit or whatever it was. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll have to tune into that one. I think.
What about the LeBron doc?
When is that?
The doc about Sierra Cannon.
Oh, no, I got to check that out. I know our Asian show Boogie is coming tomorrow, right? In theaters tomorrow, Boogie.
Oh yeah.
The Asian City on a Hill I've been watching. That's pretty good. It's a good series.
Is it?
Right. Yeah. Really. It's like at least 10 episodes.
The director of the basketball movie.
Who is?
He's Eddie the director, Wong? Producer, writer,
yeah.
Star. Yeah.
Yeah, chef and restaurateur. It's pretty Eddie Huang. Also writer of Fresh Off the Boat.
Yeah, Eddie
Huang. I think I saw that movie.
Fresh Off the Boat? No, it's a TV show on ABC.
That's what I meant.
It's good. Yeah. It's like they move to Orlando and they open like a cattleman's ranch restaurant, and it's pretty good.
I have nothing.
It's like in its fourth or fifth season already.
Oh no, I'm not sure.
All right. Until next week.
Yep.
We'll see you guys pregame. Pregame 30 minutes prior. Hopefully we'll have Zay. All right, guys.
Good night.